Hello, and welcome to the Should I Go See It podcast, where every other Friday we take a deeper dive into the one-sentence reviews on shouldigoseeit.com. This week we'll be discussing Cuckoo and Alien Romulus. I'm your host, Bill George. With me today, as always, AJ Rebecki and super producer Craig Stanton.
Mielo.
Not as always.
That's
true.
You did. You did miss a week and you're back.
I know. I missed a few. I feel like I've missed a few in the last few months, but I'm back. Bill, Craig, boys, how are we?
Life happens, AJ. How was your time away?
They say when you have kids, a vacation is just parenting in a different location. And yeah, that's what it is. But hey, the kids have fun. Hey, you want to hear a fucking hilarious story? Ready for this?
Yes.
So we take James to the go-karts. My wife takes him around the first time. And he was like, I want to drive with daddy. And I was like, okay. Yeah. Okay. Like Paul Walker, Vin Diesel about to come out right now. We're screaming around the track. And it's like Bud's go-kart down the Cape. It's just a circle. It's a big donut. You're driving. And we're like taking the inside. We're drafting people. We're just a maniac.
Just finding your line and just
yeah. I'm like, I'm in it to win it. And what happens is the last lap, they come out, they wave the flag, and they have like transmitters that slow down all of the carts so they can like park safely. Mm-hmm. I don't know what this girl was thinking. She was like, I don't get paid enough for this shit. She never came out with the transmitter. So I'm going into the bay at like,
oh my,
15 miles an hour. And then I realized, because I had never touched the brake the entire time, right?
Yep.
That the way you sit in these go-karts, it's not like a regular car where the steering column goes into the dash. Like, it's between my legs. Uh-huh. So you're supposed to brake with your left foot and gas with your right foot.
Yeah, you got to get over. You gotta get over.
Like,
you
gotta cross. You're like this. You're like this. But I'm thinking, like, oh, I'm driving a regular car. Let me get my leg up and over.
No.
And in doing so, my leg gets stuck. And then my sandal gets caught under the accelerator.
No.
And I'm, like, holding on to James. And I just, like, into the pit.
Just brace for impact. Railing speed.
Into two parked go-karts and then into the wall where people were waiting to get on the ride next. And like, these people are like horrified. And like, one guy was like, Hannah was waiting with the baby. And he was like, that guy's going to get his fucking kid killed. And she's like, all right, like, let's get out of here. I apologized to the lady who was working there. I said, my sandal got stuck. She said, I don't care. It happens all the time. So we're driving home. And James goes, Mommy, you're a better driver than daddy. And she was like, yep. And I'm like, yeah, bud.
And also like, my ear's bleeding.
And he was like, yeah, because daddy just drove right into that fucking wall, huh?
He said that.
He didn't skip a beat, went right into it, dude. And I hadn't laughed that hard in a very long time.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So that was vacation.
But now you're double screwed I wouldn't have been able to help myself either, but you gave him the big laugh reaction.
Oh, yeah. Now, yeah, that is going to be. Then he started
popping out all over the place.
Yeah. So then that became a thing towards the end of vacation where he kept running around in circles yelling, Jesus fucking Christ, Jesus fucking Christ, Jesus fucking Christ. And then because they pick up on everything that you say, like, I have a weird back. And apparently I was out and Hannah was with him and he was like in his room picking up one of his stuffed animals and he stopped and goes, oh, my fucking back. So I had to sit him down and have a conversation of why the F word is a naughty word. We don't say it.
Oh,
so yeah.
Sure. Yeah. That's what the snapshots we get into the Rebecca household are just
wow.
Madness.
Prime content.
What a madness. Series of events.
Madness. But yeah. That was my time. Boys.
Wow.
How are you? Wrap it up summer?
Yeah, still a very unsummery summer for me. And more recently, I'm just getting over a cold. So that's fun. Ugh. I guess that happens in the summer, too.
Mm-hmm.
So not feeling that great. Although I will say I started running, AJ. I added that to my workout.
With your feet and your legs?
Can you pan the camera to like the $8,000 treadmill that you bought on a snap session?
No? Outdoor running.
Outdoor running. I was going to say, that shirt looks really tight around your biceps.
Well, I mean, I still lift as well. I'm just adding in, you know, sometimes I got the rowing, I got the cycling, now I got the running, I got the weights.
Wow.
Just got to, you know.
Jesus.
Yeah. So I've been doing that, and then I got sick, and that's kind of been it. And being sick has let me go further and further into my Game of Thrones rewatch, which we will cover later in the broadcast. But that has been my entire life, basically.
Love that.
Craig?
Oh, man. Well, you know, I've been having a pretty summery summer. I've been moving around a lot, too much, arguably. Mm-hmm. Back, though, for a while. Don't have any travel plans, really, for the next month, which I'm psyched about. I have an airplane-related discussion topic for us a little bit later, but why don't we talk about what we've been watching, and we'll get there.
Yeah, AJ, you watched some things on vacation, I presume?
I did. First night of vacation, Hannah couldn't do it, watched Jaws. Tried to watch it once a summer.
And you were on the Cape at the time, right?
And I was on the Cape, first night on the Cape, like cold beer in my hand.
Perfect.
Put on Jaws.
Did you crush the can?
Oh my God. Yeah, sure did. Broke it open. My gums are like just ripped to shit. I was bleeding for days. No, such a good movie. Here's a few things that I want to touch on with Jaws, Bill.
Yeah.
The first 5 to 7.5 minutes are probably parts of the most poorly made cinema of all time.
It's a hatchet job.
Continuity issues, day for night shooting, just weird shit that goes on that you're like, what the fuck is wrong with these people?
Yeah.
And then they go into like the day after.
Yep.
And the entire movie from there on out is basically perfectly made. And I don't understand what happened.
Yeah, it is jarring that opening sequence. It's a great sequence when she's being attacked. Obviously, it is thrilling and engaging and terrifying. But yeah, the him on the beach and the cutting and the time of day and everything. It's just like weird sequence.
Midnight, and then it's like sunset, and then it's first thing in the morning, and then back to midnight, all within a matter of minutes.
And then there's like no lighting.
Every time they do a wide shot too, it's like that's stock footage. Like that's definitely stock footage.
Yeah,
it's like just people on a beach.
Full moon, like, yeah. Out of nowhere sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a mess.
A little weird.
And then you're like, holy shit, this movie's perfect.
Yep.
Also, PG rating, they got away with basically everything.
Well, I believe that was before the MPAA invented the PG-13. I think that came later in the 80s.
It was just
so it was basically PG or X or whatever they had at the time. So that's why I like the movie Airplane, which has frontal nudity, is PG. Like they didn't have it.
What constituted R?
I don't know.
Jesus.
I don't remember.
Snuff films, porn.
I don't even know if they had R. It was like X or NC-17.
There was just pornography.
I don't know. The history of the MPAA is very strange.
Yeah. And then the lines from the movie, they're just
iconic. The entire script, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Incredible.
My favorite is like, we need a bigger fish to put in my butt.
Yeah, that's a great one. But the incomparable Richard Dreyfuss, was that one?
I think could have been, but anyways, it was great.
That just reminded me of the other day. I was on a ferry, not a Cape Cod ferry, but a different ferry. And there was a bunch of tourists, like European tourists. And I like organically in real life saw a man say to someone who I presume was his wife in like some foreign accent that I won't recreate it, but couldn't place, say, we're going to need a bigger boat getting on the ferry. It's awesome.
Look at that.
Jaws. Universal Jaws. Language.
Fucking USA, baby.
Sure is, baby.
Yep.
And then the second night, we both watched Civil War. Alex Garland's Civil War.
Yeah. So Craig and I saw Civil War. Mm-hmm. We saw it together, right? Yeah.
I believe so.
And I loved it. I'm curious your take.
I liked it. It was an emotional roller coaster. Mm-hmm. There is some aspects of it, like the whole fact of it being like vignettes across the country and like different scenarios as they work their way down to DC was good, was great. There was just some aspects to it, like I just didn't like.
Really?
Like I didn't like.
Go ahead.
Kirsten Dunst's character, I didn't really care for.
Interesting.
She seemed kind of flat and like the mailman kind of with the heart of gold, like the disgruntled kind of just like grizzled person that happens to open up at the right moment to like, you know, make a difference in someone's life. It's just like, I don't know.
Who's the mailman? What are you talking about, mailman?
Like, there's like that like trope of like the mailman with the heart, like the disgruntled employee with the heart of gold. You never heard that trope before?
No. But who is you're in reference
Kirsten
to this?
Dunst, yeah, the
saying,
mailman?
I'm saying that she's that type of character. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Okay.
No, there wasn't a hey mailman, like I need to bring some packages down to the president.
Pretty sure the postal service wasn't still operating.
No.
That while they were shelling
suspended with habeas corpus. Yeah, no. In times of terror act or situations of active war, I don't think the post office runs.
See, I actually like it more upon reflection than I did at the time. I thought the narrative structure was like weird. And now when I think back on it and I just remember each individual vignette, like, oh, that was a cool scene. Oh, that was neat. Oh, that sequence is really cool. Like the more I think about it, looking back, the more I thought it was actually really strong.
Yeah. But like the scenes and sequences are great, but when you put it all together, is the sum as good as the individual parts, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I'd have to watch it again to get a better feel for it.
I think that movie was a good example of a phenomenon that you've certainly described before, Bill, which is a movie that was done a disservice by the marketing. And in this case, I think in a big way, just by the title. Like, this is not a, like, I don't know. I don't have any suggestions for what they should have called it instead, but like the fucking war movie that, I mean, one of your biggest things coming out of it wasn't really a criticism of the movie itself. It was like what your expectation of the movie was going to be.
Yeah.
It was like, I want to see the tactical. I want to see who's going where the, you know, like all that stuff. Like that was clearly not at all what that movie was about. But, you know, I don't know. I just feel like if they called it something different and if it was kind of positioned in a slightly different way, then like you could have gone into it being like, oh, this is going to be like a thought-provoking sort of pensive movie. That's kind of harrowing, but it's not like a fucking, you know, it's not like Call of Duty, you know?
Right. Yeah, that is
Saving Private
Ryan.
True.
Like, and maybe that's why I like it more with distance, is because I'm now further away from those expectations and I'm just looking at it as the movie it is versus at the time I was definitely disappointed in the movie it could have been and knowing which states went where and what happened. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I dug it. I'm glad you watched it.
Yeah, I mean, the goddamn poster was a sniper on top of the
Statue of Liberty. Greatest movie poster ever, yeah.
Yeah, like, you're kind of like, okay, we're into it. The things that I did like, though, one aspect that I love from a guy who likes taking pictures, is I love how they would edit like the finalized frame
of the photo,
on top of the frame of the movie. I think that was a really cool way to do it. And
yeah, I thought visually, stylistically, I loved
it. It was great.
The whole thing, yeah.
Soundtrack was sick. The editing was great. Sound design was amazing. It was just the whole narrative structure that I think I just got lost in after a while. But overall, solid film. Okay. Boys, what are you watching? What'd you watch? Craig, you watched Mad Max?
I got one. Yeah, I watched Mad Max on an airplane.
Fury Road?
God.
I watched Mad Max Fury Road on an airplane.
Surprised Bill didn't commit seppuku because of that.
Jeez, that's... Yeah, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. I mean, you brought some shame on your house.
Here's what I'm going to say about that. I've been traveling a lot recently, like I alluded to earlier. I've been spending more time than normal for me on an airplane. Uh-huh. So I've watched a bunch of plane movies recently, and it has surfaced a question that I want to get your guys' opinion on, which is, so I watched Mad Max, and I thought it was mostly stupid. And here's the thing that I'll say. I'm 8 inches away from the screen, right? Yeah. So it might as well be the size of a building if I'm going to be 50 feet away from it. Super fucking close. I got wicked nice in-ear monitors. So I'm hearing it, baby. I got the sound. I got the panning. I got the noise isolation. I'm in it. I'm in it to win it. So that's all there. It's all there. I thought the movie was sort of dumb. It was a 2.5 hour long car chase. I didn't really care about really anyone. And I thought it was kind of stupid. So here's my question to the group. Is there some sort of like, I want to call it the airplane test, where if a movie can't be viewed in that format, does it, like, is it good, basically? One time, a long time ago, I remember reading a quote from John Mayer, of all people, friend of the pod, AJ, one of AJ's
my
boys,
boy,
is that he said something to the effect of, and I don't remember what the actual quote is, and I might even be misattributing it, but he said something to the effect of, like, if a song can't stand on its own with just like singing in an acoustic guitar or singing in a piano, it's not a good song. It's like if you're relying on big orchestration and big dynamics and like one drops and like all these kind of like studio production tricks and stuff like that, then like ultimately you're probably not dealing with that good of a song. So my question to you is, if it can't find its way onto that format and still stand up, is it fucking worth anything? Bill.
Oh my God. So there's a lot to unpack here. First of all, I mean, I disagree with your entire premise to begin with. Like the discussion of whether it works in that form. The fact that you don't think it worked is the bigger issue. Whether we want to get into some arbitrary reductive line in the sand about whatever, fine. But like you're wrong about it not being a good movie. So like that's my bigger concern.
Let me walk it back a little bit. I don't think I said it wasn't a good movie. I just think it just didn't really do it for me that much. I know people lost their minds about that movie, so there was also an expectation factor that I was just like, it's fine.
That's what you're going to get from Bill, that you're a fucking idiot and move on. Like, this is stupid.
Jump in.
I am, as Bill knows, I am a huge ambiance guy, right? And I'll give you a perfect example. If I was to watch Harry Potter on a plane, fine. I can get through it. I'll have a few chuckles. I'll have a smile on my face. Yeah. If I watch it at home in the middle of summer, 95 degree days, I'm going to be like, I guess I can slog my way through it. Now, picture this. Middle of winter.
I know where you're going.
There's a fire roaring. There's some gentle snowflakes coming down. Maybe a good candle burning. I turn on Harry Potter and my God damn, it's the best movie that's ever been fucking made. Mm-hmm. I think the setting in which you watch certain films affects the way you feel about them.
Agreed. Now, and the airplane setting does a disservice to certain types of movies.
Sure.
But wouldn't you also then say that a movie that could be deployed at any time, any place, any mood, any season is better?
It's a great movie or a perfect movie.
Yeah, 100%. One that is like climate dependent and vibes dependent and screen size dependent.
Yeah. I mean, are
some more versatile than others? I guess, but I wouldn't make that a judgment on quality. I would say if it didn't work in a movie theater, then that's the problem because it was designed, built, created for a movie theater. That's the only criteria that matters to me. Then do some movies work in better ways afterwards? Yeah, sure. But
yeah.
But my judgment falls not on where it works after the fact. It's where if it works in a theater.
And Craig, no director goes in. George Miller doesn't go and make Mad Max, but God damn it, I can't wait to see what this looks like on a fucking airplane. Yeah.
He doesn't feel like he's a failure if it doesn't. You know, I don't know if this will play to row 13. I don't.
When it gets interrupted by the captain making announcements.
I don't know. I'm going to agree with Bill here but to your point, ultimate point is the films that you can watch no matter where, when, how, what season, what year are the true great films that are out there.
Sure. Those would be your first ballot Hall of Famers for sure.
Yeah, so it sounds like you agree with the premise of my question.
No. Also, I have to take umbrage with the fact that you dismissively said it's a 2.5-hour car chase as if that isn't fucking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is when you're in a big theater. Anyways. Okay. We got some good juices flowing out of that. That's
sure.
good. Bill is currently
they're flowing all right.
Bill's posting on ZipRecruiter right now for a podcast editor to hire because I'm fucking. This is my last episode for sure.
The juices are flowing to the vein in my forehead. If you can see.
Well, if that didn't get Bill fired up, news definitely will. So, Bill.
Yes.
Last week, Disney hosted its annual D23 event. And shared trailers for projects we already know about and announced a bunch of new ones. I think we should go through a list of the announcements by category, break them down, talk about them.
All right, let's do it. There's so much here.
I know. There's so much, but also on the surface, there's not a lot.
Yeah.
So from the Marvel camp, there was new footage from the Ironheart TV show. there was a first look at Daredevil Born Again, the TV series, which the entire cast of the Netflix show is returning, including John Bernthal as the Punisher. I actually think there's a caveat there, Bill. I don't think Foggy is returning as his role.
Oh, is that right?
I believe so. Okay. And then last but not least, a full trailer for Agatha All Along premiered as well. So thoughts on the Marvel world?
Ironheart, not particularly interested. I know they introduced slash created that character in Black Panther 2, if I recall, mm-hmm. and nothing really grabbed me about that. And the preceding years since, my interest in that is not there unless they really show me something. But so far, whatever. Daredevil, Born Again. Sure. I don't think I ever finished Punisher.
Oh, you're an idiot.
I'm pretty sure I did finish Daredevil, I want to say.
I might do a rewatch before.
But yeah, everybody being back, essentially, and Bernthal being back is cool. I'm also curious how it plays in, if it does, to what was the show? Hawkeye? Because D'Onofrio was in that, and I forget what happened there. I forget a lot of this stuff, because this was now 5 to 10 years ago. But I know you are excited for that one.
Sure am. Love the Punisher. Love the series. Stuff. Loved everything about it.
Yeah, he just got the Punisher sticker on the back of his truck.
Hell yeah, brother.
Never gets pulled over.
And then the trailer for Agatha All Along. What, like, why? What are we doing here?
That trailer is, and I can't stress this enough, bizarre. Like, I'm going to watch it just because it looks so freaking weird. Like, I have no idea what that show is.
Do you think they're doing it on purpose? Like, do you think they're making it like this weird, kitschy, like almost 90s?
It definitely seems that they have just gone into like, let's make a cool one-off show about witches, because it does not look related to anything besides Agatha carrying over. That, like, it's not like there's any real connection, at least in that trailer, to the events of WandaVision, besides here's Agatha, but now it's her in this alternate world with these new characters exploring this realm. I have no idea. It just looks super weird, but I'll check it out because I think Catherine Hahn is phenomenal. So I think it's worth a shot on that one.
Yeah.
And I'll let you tell me how Daredevil is before I jump in.
Yeah, and the log line for Agatha All Along was released, and it makes me want to fucking jump off a bridge.
Okay.
You want to read it?
I mean, at this point, we have to.
A spellbound Agatha Harkness regains freedom thanks to a teen's help. Intrigued by his plea, she embarks on the Witch's Road trials to reclaim her powers and discover the teen's motivation.
Yeah, I don't know what any of that means.
Geniuses who brought you.
We'll see how it goes.
I know. Stupid. All right. Okay.
That's Marvel.
That's Marvel.
Not a ton there. We already talked at the last episode about the big Marvel news, which they did for Comic-Con, not D23. So what else we got?
Live action films. We got the first look at Tron Ares, featuring Evan Peters, Jared Leto, and Greta Lee, with Nine Inch Nails providing the score, which seems fucking sick. Yep. We saw a first look at the new Snow White, which they are not using little people. They are using full CGI, which took the internet by storm. And then we also got a full trailer for Mufasa, The Lion King. What?
I want to start with Mufasa because I've seen this trailer in theaters and this movie looks terrible. First of all, I don't even know if it should be in the live action category, really, because it is full CG, like the other Lion King.
That's how they do it.
But that's how they describe it.
Yep.
And the trailer is basically like, you know Mufasa, but do you know how him and Scar became brothers or whatever? And it just shows...
Yeah, their parents fucked.
Like, no. Scar was like... Mufasa was adopted into Scar's clan. Apparently, they create this entire backstory
out
of nowhere from Mufasa and Scar. It's just... It all goes back to... I think it was Patton Oswalt's stand-up about, like, I love the things I love. I don't care about where they come from. I think he was talking about, like, I love Darth Vader. Darth Vader is super cool. I don't need to see him as a child. Like, I don't care where he came from. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with Mufasa. Like, why do I need a history of Mufasa and Scar when they did such a good job projecting it in, like, baking it into the movie? And, like, I already feel like I know these characters and their backstory because they were so well written and acted in the original.
Yep.
And now it's just destroying everything. So anyway, that drives me nuts.
Okay. How do you feel about Snow White and her hatred for real life little people?
I mean, that part, I expected full CG for everything all the time at this point. I like Rachel Zegler. I think she'll probably be good. Gal Gadot as the Wicked Witch. What is she called in Snow White? I don't remember.
Not the Wicked Witch of the West. That's
that's
Wicked. That's
the evil sorceress. I don't know what they call it.
Adele Dazeem.
I am not particularly interested in these live action remakes. I will see them because they're big releases that people will ask me about. But I mean, if Beauty and the Beast and Lion King and Little Mermaid are any guide, it's probably not going to be great.
Okay.
And then Tron. I love Greta Lee. I think Reznor doing the score is awesome. I love the Tron visuals. I've never really loved the Tron movies as movies. The original is obviously super dated, but it's got its place. And then that Legacy one, I remember thinking it looked cool, but not really being super interested in the story.
Yeah.
So I really have no idea what to expect from it. I'm sure I'll see it though.
I mean, the soundtrack's probably gonna be dope as shit. So
yeah, that with the visuals, like it'll be worth it.
Yeah, we might have to take a few edibles and go see that. Okay, Star Wars Cam. We saw the first trailer for the Skeleton Crew limited TV series with Jude Law. And we saw a first look at the feature film Mandalorian and Grogu. And this will be the first Star Wars feature film since 2019. And then asterisk, after D23, The Acolyte has been officially canceled and not renewed for season 2.
Yep.
Go.
The Skeleton Crew thing, I watched the trailer. I love Jude Law as much as the next guy, so I was like, I gotta see what this is about. But it looks like it's like a Goonies like type of thing, like a group of kids get wrapped up in whatever. So it's definitely, I'm not the audience for that. It looked actually pretty well made. I'm sure people will like it. Mandalorian and Grogu getting a feature film. I mean, I gave up on Mandalorian, so I don't really know what to think about this. I also was surprised. Like, it feels like we've talked about so much Star Wars all the time. The fact that they mentioned that this is the first actual feature film since the end of the second sequel series, what do you want to call it, is surprising. I feel like there was another movie since then, but I guess not.
No,
it's just shows.
Episodic trash. Yep.
Yeah. So I don't know what to think about that. And then Acolyte getting canceled again. We went through this before. I watched the first couple episodes and gave up. So I based on the quality of the show that I saw, I did not expect it to necessarily stick around, or I didn't think it should stick around. I did expect it to stick around, I should say, because it felt like it generated so much online discourse / engagement / buzzword that Disney would keep it almost for that, but I guess it wasn't enough.
And then last but not least, animation to round up this dumpster fire of an event. New casting announcements for the voices of Zootopia 2, concept art release for Frozen 3, announcement that Brad Bird will direct the next Incredibles movie, Incredibles 3. We learned that the Inside Out world will expand to television, getting its own limited series. And then we saw new trailers for Moana 2, and then a teaser that there will be a Toy Story 5. Can this fucking company, Bill? I'm gonna let you rip into Disney.
It's so sad. It's so frustrating. I don't know if it was last year maybe or 2 years ago, I read a biography of Walt Disney, which was fascinating. And thinking about the things that he did and the innovation that he came up with and the fact that basically this was the most imaginative company of the 20th century, now in the 21st century is the most just repetitive, is just so disappointing when you see it. Like, individually, different movies get people excited and like it, whatever. But when you look at it in a list like this and you see that this is the output of this company, is just
brutal.
Disappointing.
It's so disappointing. And the problem is too, when I watch like, you know, these reveal teasers at D23 and you have all of these Disney people going nuts, it's like you're fueling the fire of mediocrity. Like, you're letting them just reuse IPs over and over and over again just for money, instead of like having the balls to say like, what are we going to do next? Because we were, like, to your point, Bill, we were once the most imaginative, breaking, cutting edge company in the entire world, and now we just do nothing with it.
Yeah, it goes back to my favorite Disney quote when he made the Three Little Pigs cartoon, which was massive at the time, biggest thing ever, basically. And people asked him if he was going to do another one because it was so wildly popular. And his response was, you can't top pigs with more pigs. Like that was it. Like, he did the Three Little Pigs. That's done. We got to move on. Like, you can't top it with more of the same. And yet here we are 80
Disney,
years later.
Disney HQ, they have just crossed out the you can't. And you have a sign that says top pigs with more pigs.
So yeah, it is just, it's tough out there. I mean, again, that being said, am I going to see Incredibles 3? Yes, unfortunately. Like, am I going to see some of the stuff? Yes. So that also adds to it. So that is the cycle that needs to be broken, is the financial one, because that's what keeps it going. But that's incredibly difficult to do.
I know.
So
it reminds me, and I thought about this after the, you know, I watched some of the event stuff in the trailers, is can you name me right now off the top of your head the best animated movie you've seen in the last 5 years?
Including you're saying CG, not like hand-drawn. Yeah.
Anywhere from any studio.
I don't know if it was too long ago, but the first Inside Out is the first thing that pops in my head.
Fresh, original, new.
Yes.
I was gonna say
wildly new.
Mitchell versus the Machines, the Sony animation studio ones. Like, those are films that you're like, holy shit, it's fresh, it's new, it's hilariously written. Like, there's sight gags, there's all this stuff. I just don't know what it's going to take for people to have, you know, the ability to create more films like that. Because just after watching this event, man. Oof.
I mean, my we can hope for, I think it's Elio is the next Pixar movie. And it's an original property. It's about a kid that gets abducted by aliens, then ends up like being the ruler or something like that. I remember seeing a teaser a long time ago. That, I think, is the next Pixar movie. I think it's called Elio. So, like, fingers crossed that maybe they can hit one out of the park with that, and it'll feel new. We'll see.
I have two quick thoughts about this, and they're kind of related. Just that, like, not every movie you put out needs to have this like cheap little social media pop when you announce that it's going to exist. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
Like the whole idea of like blah 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 two and blah, 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 like it's just to get this little like buzzy, like, get
to bump,
you know,
the stock price,
whatever publication to write about it. And it's like, if you're just making a new IP that's really awesome and you say we're coming out with the fucking whatever thing, no one's gonna be like, oh my god, like, everyone's gonna be like, what the fuck is that? Which is why when you make a great movie for the first time, you just make it.
Yep.
And then people like it, and then, you know, whatever, you've made a great movie. The other thing, like, so that's just annoying to me, that like it seems like the whole like production slate, everything that's in the pipeline is based around like, can we get like a little stupid cheapy social media pop out of the announcement of this? If yes, then proceed through the Disney pipeline, which is such a dumb, you know, filter. And then the other thing is, Disney has all the money in the fucking world. Why not just put together a little like strike force
incubator,
two people, you know, leading a team, like an A24 style thing, where you just go around to film festivals and like be the production house for, or the publishing house for like a bunch of sick shit. Like, I don't know, Disney Reserve. booze. Like,
well, I think
whatever little pocket needs to like clear out an office somewhere in HQ and just put some people in there and like be an actual movie making business that makes meaningful films that actually move the fucking culture and society forward. You know, it won't take much. Be a drop in the bucket,
and you fund it with the fucking revenue from Toy Story 5.
Of course,
but when you say that, all I can think about is early Pixar, when it was those like group of four or five directors that laid out that's when they did like Wall-E, Inside Out, like Ratatouille. Like, they had like a string of like four or five brand new movies. And it was just like this small collective, like off in their own little offices before these things were like Finding Nemo, I think, was in that mix. Like, when they just rattled off four or five hits in a row that were all new and innovative.
And these aren't like little low budget find those people indie films. Together. Like, these are well-funded projects that took millions of dollars to make. But yeah, it's just not, I mean, I don't think that any of us here are necessarily saying, like, don't make The Incredibles 3 and don't make the Mufasa thing. It's just when that's the only thing you're making, it's really depressing.
Right.
Also, yes, give me fair. Ratatouille fucking 2.
By all means, like, make your money. You want to make, like, worldwide, you know, applicable to all audiences, enjoyable by all audiences, literally anywhere on the planet. Like, by all means, make that movie. But
you got to fund some creativity on the side for sure.
All right, Bill, for this week's Should I Go See It segment, we'll be talking about two films, Cuckoo and Alien Romulus. For Cuckoo, according to IMDb.com, a 17-year-old girl is forced to move with her family to a resort where things are not what they seem.
Are they ever?
Bill, should I go see it?
No, I gave it a no, AJ, and it's a tough one. I feel like I really wanted to love it. Like, I really did.
Okay.
And it's got a lot going for it. Very cool, creepy setting, you know, isolated hotel resort in the mountains of Germany or wherever they are, Bavaria. So, like, very cool setting. Well directed. It's a good looking movie. Generally well constructed. Good tone, good atmosphere, consistent. Hunter Schafer acts her ass off. Like, she has to carry the movie. She's basically in every single frame. And she crushes it. Like, it's clear that she can carry a film.
Okay.
Dan Stevens also puts in a good turn as, you know, the creep. He excels in roles like that, of being like the weirdo. And so on the surface, it's like a really great elevated horror movie.
What's the problem?
The problem, AJ, is the story. It never really grabbed me, and it just felt like it was unfinished, undercooked, needed some more drafts. Like,
okay.
It's one of those movies where it would have benefited from either being more specific and explaining what's going on in more detail, or going the opposite way, make it like a super ambiguous, weird movie and then let the audience decide. Instead, it's like in this weird middle where there's just enough detail where you, like, can't project too much onto it, but there's not enough detail for it to just make sense on its own. Like, it's still a weird, ambiguous movie, but Jesus. Like, there's like, they give you little hints of detail of like what's going on, but never enough to put the whole picture together. And I like, for weird horror fans, like, it may be worth a watch if you like weird elevated horror, but I think most people would leave it a little bit exhausted and like kind of scratching their heads and feel unfulfilled when they leave the theater. And so that's why I kind of had to give it a general no, even though maybe someone like you, more of a cinephile, like, you might want to check it out because you might see more in it. But for general audiences, I think there's just not enough there to merit the theater trip.
What a brain buster. Is it an English film?
Yes, there are subtitles probably 20% of the time, but the majority is all in English, yeah.
Seems like this is going to be a great like HBO Max around middle of October, where it's like horror movies for you to catch up on this year, and they like have it there and you're like, oh, an hour and 42 minutes and it came out this year. Fuck it.
Yeah. It's, I would definitely recommend it in that setting. It definitely feels like, another recommendation, if you're looking for a movie like this, an elevated horror movie that feels like it's an A24 movie, but isn't, The Lodge. I would definitely recommend The Lodge for anybody who hasn't seen that one, which is quasi similar. But I would recommend that over this. But yeah, watch it on Max if you're interested in the premise or to see, you know, Hunter Schafer as a lead. But it's just, I don't know. It didn't do a ton for me.
Wow. Jesus. Okay.
Yeah.
You want to get down to the showstopper?
Yeah, let's move to it.
Alien Romulus. According to IMDb.com, while scavenging the deep ends of a derelict space station, a group of young space colonists come face to face with the most terrifying life form in the universe. Bill, how good is this movie?
Yes, you should go see it, especially you, AJ. I said in my review, this is proof that they actually can make them like they used to. They don't make them like they used to, except in this case, they did, and they proved that you can.
They don't, but they did, and you can, but they won't.
Correct. Tell me everything. Just talk so dirty to me.
My heart was actually racing at multiple points. I was really in it. So this is directed by the same director who directed Don't Breathe, which is one of my favorite thrillers of the last however long. Like, whenever anybody asks me, like, hey, what's a good, fun, scary movie? I always say Don't Breathe. Like, that's my go-to. And I didn't even realize it was the same guy until after I saw this. And I was like, who directed this masterpiece? And I was like, oh, makes sense. It's this guy. I thought it was exceptional. To give you a little more backstory, it takes place between Alien and Aliens.
Okay. Love that.
Ragtag group of friends on a mining colony decide to try to salvage a ship so that they can take the cryopods that are in it so that they can get the fuck off this mining colony and like go somewhere else.
Okay.
What they don't know is that the abandoned space station they're trying to salvage had been the space station that picked up the remnants of the Nostromo from the first Alien, and that's why it's abandoned. And then fucking they get there and they are...
You didn't just abandon it for fun, homie?
No, they dock and then they're in the shit.
Wow.
And it's and that's the setup. And it's so great. It feels like the first movie in terms of the pacing is very similar. So it like does take a little bit to kind of get them there.
Yeah, but that's the foreplay is the best one of the best parts of it.
Exactly. And they borrow a lot of the music cues from the original. So it's just it feels like you're back there. They use like the old school like technology. And all the lights on the ship and everything. Oh, it's
hoses,
so it's,
hoses yeah, everywhere,
random,
and there's
random
scenes coming out.
Lights, steam.
Yeah. Oh my god!
It's
Bill,
so
I'm almost
great.
There. Keep
it's
talking.
So great. They also use practical effects most of the time for like the aliens themselves, which is massive. And then they have subtle special effects deployed when needed. They also have the effects of like gorgeous space vistas and all that stuff, which is sick. I saw it in IMAX, so it was. You know, beautiful and big and loud. That's everything you want from a thrilling sci-fi experience.
Ugh.
And the tension building is just top-notch. Like, the set pieces are incredible. The gore is great. The cast is great. It just feels in the universe of the films that came before it. It's fantastic. I loved it. I loved it.
I love that. Okay. Let's take a step back. So, we haven't had an Alien film since... Covenant, correct?
Correct. 2017.
That sounds correct, yes. Ridley Scott made Prometheus and Covenant as part of a trilogy that he never got to finish because they axed it. So we never got the third part of that series.
Besides Alien, I think Prometheus is my second favorite of the series.
Over you, Aliens?
Okay, so third.
All right, okay. I'm with you.
We both loved it. We got the origin story that we didn't think we needed, right? The fact, like, where did the xenomorph come from? And we kind of got to see it in real time with one of the most gruesome, perfect examples of body horror that we've ever seen.
Yes.
Ever.
Still a watershed moment in sci-fi history.
Covenant, we thought we were going to go a little bit deeper, and it was just a fucking hot mess.
Yeah, big time left turn mistakes in the story of that one.
Yeah, oh, everything. Is Romulus, like, is it the movie that we didn't really need, but we got it anyways? Like, I'm going to see it. It sounds amazing. But on the surface, it seems like it's kind of a little bit of a rinse and repeat of Alien. Like, it's a weird kind of reboot in a way.
It is, in a way, I guess. It is a culmination, I would say, of... sort of the franchise in the sense that it starts with that alien vibe, but then there are multiple aliens and there are some action sequences that kind of harken back to Aliens. And then, so like it kind of brings together a lot of different elements of the series. My only quibble with the movie, like any notes I have are very, very minor, but there is some fan service in there that is like a little, like some of it is cool Easter eggs. You're like, oh my God, that's the thing from the thing. And then some of it is like in your face fan service that I was like, all right, that's a little eye-rolly. So like they try to connect it a little too much sometimes, but it definitely is back to basics in terms of thrilling alien movies, as opposed to the newer Ridley Scott movies that were like super philosophical and there is no God and engineers created life on earth. And like,
and we killed Jesus and they wanted to kill us. Yeah.
They're like, forget that. We are going back to just blockbuster action filmmaking.
Shut up, nerd.
Like, yeah, exactly. And so is it like a necessary movie per se? No, but is it a thrilling, fun, like why you go to the movies type of movie for the summer? Like, hell yeah. And so it executes on all counts there.
Fuck yeah. I would rank them.
I would rank them for me, Aliens, number one. Like, maybe in terms of like number of hours watched in my life, I might have watched Aliens more than any other movie, like, honestly. So Aliens is always one. Then I would go Alien. And then it's either Prometheus or Romulus. Probably Prometheus, then Romulus.
Okay.
And then everything else. It's great. I really, really enjoyed it. I know that some critics were hating on it a little bit. I was surprised by, because again, I write my review first and then I go check out what other critics say, and usually we're pretty much in line. But a couple people were kind of dumping on it, and I think they were looking for maybe some more depth to it and yada, yeah, yada, yada. And they were more upset about the fan service, I guess, than I was. I thought it was like, kind of silly, but didn't ruin it for me. Some people were kind of, I thought they were overthinking it. Like, again, I saw it in IMAX, first show, full house, place going ballistic. Like, it was just a great movie experience.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have to think too deep. I think that's what happened with Prometheus and Covenant, is that, like, people started to go in that. You can go on Reddit right now and read basically dissertations, like doctorate dissertations on the meaning behind Prometheus and all that stuff. And it's just like, at the end of the day, like, sometimes you just want to see a fucking face hugger just rip a dude's skull off, or alien shoot out of someone's chest.
Yeah, you just want to see fucking acid for blood just burn through decks of a ship. Like, that's just what I'm here for.
Yeah. God bless America.
You gotta see it. It's a must see.
Okay. Netflix and Bill, boys, what are we watching?
I got stuff to talk about here.
Okay.
First,
yeah,
new docuseries about the Lacey Peterson case.
It's been on my TV the last few days.
3 episodes on Netflix. I followed this case when it was happening, and so going back and revisiting it now was really interesting. I thought the docuseries did a really nice job. So highly recommend it. My only gripe, and this is not necessarily with this as much as documentaries today, is I'm just so sick of the template that has been created 10 years ago for Making a Murderer is still how we open every single documentary that I watch. It opens.
This is how to lose Bill George in the first 10 seconds of a doc.
Yeah. What is it? Is it a phone call? Is it a phone ring?
It opens with phone rings, fade up.
911, what's your emergency?
Fade up on drone shot of a sleepy town at sunrise.
Yeah.
And then 911 call, text on the screen, narrating in the background. It's just like how we open every single documentary. It's so, and I get it. It's hard to like, how do you just start telling the story? Like, it's hard to get into it, but they always start with the 911 call. Then they go into news footage, archival news footage.
California Highway Patrol, what's your emergency?
I found a dead body washed up on the beach. I don't know what's happening.
Then you get into the archival news footage. Then you get the main subject sitting down in the chair.
A dead body was found washed up on the beach in Modesto, California this morning.
I never thought it could happen in our hometown.
Then they cut to like the twist or like the gotcha quote from the person in the chair. And then it smash cuts the title. And then we get into some interviews. It's just everything I watch all the time.
Yeah.
Anyway, that aside, really well done, Doc. Highly recommend.
Oh my God. What a plot twist.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, they say that 90% of what makes a documentary work is the subject, and it's a good subject. So, regardless of the
you
way
find that
they
a good subject,
it's a worthwhile subject. I'm not
get
saying,
your popcorn ready.
I wish we had a Patreon account so we could release the behind the scenes text messages roasting Bill about this whole thing.
I don't want to get into it, AJ. I don't want to relive it. The point is, it's an interesting story.
Okay.
Then, just now, before the recording of this very podcast, I started watching Untold, The Murder of Air McNair. And this is Netflix's 30 for 30. Sports docs are called Untold. That's their series. And they have a new one every week for the next 3 weeks. And the first one is about the murder of Steve McNair, which I remember Steve McNair. I remember the Tennessee Titans. I was following sports and everything else at that time. So come to find out he was murdered. I had no idea. I don't know how I missed that. A blind spot in my pop culture history and sports history.
Steve McNair was fucking murdered?
Yeah. So this doc is about that. I didn't get to finish it because we had to start recording the podcast. But besides the opening of the 911 call, which happened in this as well, it was pretty interesting. So I got to go see how it ends.
Wait. What?
AJ, you don't need to Google it. It's true.
It's true.
He was murdered.
Yeah, so that I also watched. And then the big thing is I am deep into my Thrones rewatch. I think I caught up and surpassed you probably significantly at this point.
Yep. How are you feeling?
God, it's remarkable, AJ. It really is. I will say, if you're looking at it season by season, season one on rewatch, definitely a little slower, definitely feels a little slower just because the stakes are so much lower and like everything feels trivial when you know where it goes.
Yep.
But you have Ned Stark and that's what matters and you got a lot of intrigue. Season two, Tyrion is the Hand of the King. So far, I would argue is probably the best overall season. Like it just feels like it has a through line that you're following. All the stories are interesting. They are just rifling through plot. It just moves. Season three, similar. It's a little more kind of haphazard, but it also feels like it's like moving. It's when you get to season four, which has some episodes I love, and then season five, where it starts to definitely, the pace starts to slow down and the binging feels like a mistake. Craig and I had a long discussion about whether this show works binging or not. Short story to me, seasons two and three, yes, and then season four and now five, less so.
Agreed.
Because that's when you start to feel like, this entire season is Arya in the House of Black and White, like learning to become a faceless man. Like that takes a season of cuts to her versus in seasons two and three, nobody is in any one place for more than like two episodes. And then we're like moving on because they're just chewing through plot because they have plot to chew through. Once you get to like season five, and now I'm beginning six, like you can feel that they're like starting to feel like, all right, we got to figure this out. So in the meantime, we got to tread a little water on some of these plots.
Yeah.
And that's why the binging starts to feel slower because you're just like, all right, we're doing this again. That being said, any individual scene is still incredible. And seasons one through six, I still would argue are maybe the best show ever made.
You also have like very emotionally draining episodes as well, starting in like four and five, where you're like, oh my God, like that was brutal to rewatch it. Like the Red Wedding, you're like, oh my
God. Start really at the end of three with the Reigns of Castamere, that episode. From then on, it's like there's some heavier stuff.
Yeah. Yep. So like I can definitely feel for that. Yeah, where you're slightly in front of me, but I agree with every point that you've made. And I think the other thing that I've realized too during this rewatch is the characters that I never really understood how great they were. Like Marjorie Tyrell's character is good. You don't think about it in the moment, but like when you rewatch it and like the motives that's going on, the political plays that are going on behind the scenes, the way she presents herself in front of certain people rather than other people, it's so fucking good.
All the performances. Like that's really what the rewatch is about, is just those dialogue scenes where different characters mix and match and you just get to see them act off each other.
Yep.
And the writing and the acting, it's just next level. Like I've never seen anything like it. And then the only plots really that feel like they don't work for a long period, like every once in a while, one of the plots will hit a point that's kind of whatever, but it usually recovers from it. The only overall story that just feels out of place that doesn't work is Bran's. And it just feels like it's from a different show. And that's what's so frustrating, knowing where the show will end up.
He gets so annoying.
It is tough. That's the one that I want to fast forward. Like I'm preventing myself from doing that. But if I were going to skip one, like I thought Dany's storyline, I was like, I'm going to want to skip that. Actually, the Dany stuff, I actually like more on rewatch than I did previously. And even the Jon Snow stuff, I didn't mind as much on rewatch. But the Bran stuff, I like less and less every time they cut to it. And so that is like the one sour note. Otherwise, and the only other thing I'll say as the show gets past season four, five and six, you also do start to get into more moments of lucky coincidence to keep plot moving. Like the fact that Brienne of Tarth and Podrick run into Sansa and Littlefinger at the same pub at the same time. It's like, I get they're both coming and going from the same place. So like, I kind of can see that, but it also still feels a little lucky just to keep things moving.
Like sometimes they make the world and the scope of it is so big, and then all of a sudden it's conveniently very, very small.
Very small. Yeah. Yeah. So yep. I feel that more in 5 and 6. Seasons 2 and 3 just feel like all of the plot is driven from the characters, and the characters are all feel real. And then 5 and 6, it's like a little more drawn out. And then I know from memory, when it gets to 7 and 8, it's all plot and the characters are just getting forced into moving the plot forward and they don't feel like they're characters anymore. Like that obviously is going to be the big distinction. And I was debating, do I watch 7 and 8 or do I stop at 6 like I have in the past? And I'm like, I think I'm going to go all the way just so I can really, because I haven't watched 7 and 8 since they aired live. Like I haven't brought myself to do it.
Yeah.
So I think I will this time just to see if it is as bad as I remember and kind of go from there. But right now, I'm on like episode 1 of season 6. Like I'm almost there.
Oh, you're Jesus Christ, dude. You made some serious headway.
I told you, A, there's nothing else on TV. The Olympics are over. And then 2, I've been homesick. So I've just been cranking through.
Okay. What do you got for tickets? Tickets here?
You guys, no TV for you guys? I mean, Craig's been traveling.
Veep. I've been traveling and I've been veeping. Yeah.
Nice.
It's just,
how's that?
It's just,
is this your third time watching this one?
It's second. It's just such a good show. I actually had a weird moment today where Julia Louis-Dreyfus was a guest on a political podcast that I listened to, which was like a really brain bending moment. Cause I'm like, okay, the podcast is real. What she's talking about is real, but she's not Selena Meyer, the former president of the United States. She's Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who's an actor. It's just like, one of my favorite like weird like fact fiction mind bending things in all of like pop culture history is in the Creed movie where Michael B. Jordan's character goes to Philly and he stands in front of the Rocky statue, which is a real statue. The statue is real. The character is fake, but he's in a real place in Philly. Like, it's just like, wait a minute, what's real? What is reality?
Yeah. It's a fake movie.
It's like there, no, it's just like a brain.
But he existed in the reality of the movie. So they keep it.
Right. As exactly. If it's real. Exactly. Right. But like, yes, he did go to the actual Philly and see the actual Rocky statue. It's just that Rocky isn't an actual guy. So yeah, kind of hurt my brain this morning listening to that before I had any coffee. So anyways, no, Veep's the fucking best. It's the greatest. It still holds up.
That's great. I only watched that live as it aired. I've never gone back. So
it holds up remarkably well. Remarkably
Might have to
well.
At some point. Might have
I watch a few episodes here and there on occasion. And like, yeah, it's so fucking funny. It's just so fucking funny. Yep. Okay, tickets. What do you got for tickets?
Tickets.
So I plan on seeing Blink twice.
Ooh.
Which looks like a neat little original thriller. I don't know a ton about it. I saw part of a trailer and I was like, oh, this looks interesting. So I stopped watching this trailer and bought tickets to it. So we'll see how that is.
Okay.
And then Beetlejuice, which we'll probably talk about on one more podcast. I apologize, Craig. This is probably outside the limit of our normal seeing next. But I have the ticket and that's in my wallet app. And that's basically it right now. There's like a couple other, like I might end up seeing The Crow. I might end up seeing a couple other things. But those are the only confirmed ones I have right now.
When's a new Nosferatu movie coming out?
Great question. I don't know. I feel like that's a December release, but I could be wrong.
Nothing says Christmas like fucking Dracula.
That does look exceptional, though.
Only in theaters starting Christmas goddamn day.
Wow. Did I call that one?
Happy birthday, Bill. Happy birthday, Bill. Okay.
Thank you for listening to the Should I Go See It podcast. Please make sure to follow on Instagram @ Should I Go See It.